That's the problem. Okay.
Now they handle body and hearing.
B.
Okay, today is March the 12th, 2009, and we are meeting with Mr. Vern Duke and Mrs. Audrey Duke in their kitchen. And Nancy Perozzo and B. Cherniak are here to look at the photograph albums that Mr. Duke has saved over his work career. And we're starting at the beginning looking at the construction of a terminal in Churchill. And you were going to tell us a bit about the old capacity and then the new capacity.
Yeah. Originally the terminal was built to accommodate 2,500,000 bushels. And what they're doing that present day was to extend it to 5 million bushels. And what we're looking at is the construction that went on to build the additional annex. There. Oh boy, I'm good at this. Never done this before.
Oh!
That's all right.
Precious.
Yeah. The terminal itself was accommodated mainly wheat in those days. And everything was geared to the receipt and handling of wheat. Today they do multiple grains, but it's also a privately owned structure. Yes.
Who was it owned by before?
National Harbors Board.
Oh?
Yeah. And now it's owned by a privately owned company.
And who holds it now, do you know?
I didn't, but I won't remember it right now. Amtrak is a railroad. There's a railroad. And what's the name? I don't know. I'm afraid to repeat any name.
Mm-hmm.
But during the construction, it was interesting to watch just how they did it. And what they did was they had a system of pouring the cement through gradually rising forms for the whole area of construction, so that as the concrete was poured, this was all raised up and continuously, and the forms always in place, being raised hydraulically right up to the level which they wanted, which was comparable to the old annex level. Very high. Now here's pictures of the gallery going from the elevator to the seaboard, which actually was on the river. And it was large enough or long enough to accommodate 3 ships at one time. But the capacity of the elevator probably loaded no more than 2, most often 1. You want this?
Yeah, this page. Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
We're now looking at pictures of the residents at Churchill at that time, mainly Indian residents. And they consisted primarily of canvas tents, and they had boarded sides just a short ways up. And probably that was because of the snow and the draft and that sort of thing. But the tents essentially were all canvas, and they were very unsatisfactory to our eye. Oh my God.
They lived in those year-round?
Yeah. Well, yeah, well, of course, when they went up north to trap and that sort of thing, I don't know what happened to them, because we left when winter was just setting in, you know, like in November.
So these were their summer residences?
Yeah, you could call it that, summer residence. Yeah. They used to take the boards off the grain cars. They had boards that covered the front of the opening of the cars, that when the car doors were open themselves, these boards prevented the grain from running out. And when the grain was finally unloaded, the people went and they picked up some of these boards and they used them for surrounding the bottom of their tent areas. And that was home away from home. From where I go, I don't know.
I've always thought it'd be an interesting story to find out where all those grain doors were used, because I know there were multiple uses in Thunder Bay for the old grain doors.
That's right, yeah. But in Churchill it was... And not only that, when they got the grain doors, they'd take them out of the car, and there was a place that they did this, because the cars always went back clean, back to into the system. But the people that carried the grain doors from the rail side to where the tent was were usually the women. And the guy would be carrying the hammer and the saw or something, but the woman would be carrying this great pile of grain doors on her back. You're quite a sight.
Women of the grain trade.
Yeah. I imagine they pulled a sleigh when they got stuck in the snow, too. Oh, this is the history of Churchill, Port of Churchill. And it refers to...
That's pretty clear to read, isn't it?
So
that if we borrow your book, we can see those.
Yeah. And there's the Fort Prince of Wales, across the river from the town of Churchill. What remains of it. A very interesting place. It's one that's promoted in to tourists. That's our shack, our bunkhouse. And our bunkhouse was separate, and we had our own two cooks, and fully accommodation for the crew that came up. And I think we had about 25 guys came up there in those days.
And were the cooks local people, or did they come up?
No, most everybody that came to Churchill was brought in, including the stevedores and the grain cleaners and elevator workers and so on. They were pretty well all brought in.
Where did the stevedores come from?
Saskatchewan, Manitoba, farms. Yeah. They'd come up and they stayed in this place here. And this is where our boss stayed. He was there for so many years that they finally gave him a residence. And this was the management of the elevator stayed in this building here.
So the long sort of whitish building, three-story, that was for the stevedores and the workers.
Yeah. Yeah, and this building was for the management of the elevator. Yeah.
Situated on the hill.
Yeah, overlooking everybody. On the main floor and about there is where all the gambling took place.
Ah.
And a lot of men, believe it, came up to Churchill in those days for the gambling. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there are quite a bunch. There's the caribou. West of Churchill. It's not like that today, of course. You know.
Yeah.
We've done a good job.
Amazing picture.
Yeah. Here's more of the construction where they're raising up the forms. You notice the round bins that are prevail throughout the elevator? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they call just a bin. That's a regular bin here. But in between here, you notice there's almost a star shaped here.
Mm-hmm.
That's called a star bin, and all that's filled with grain. All of it is filled with grain.
They don't waste any space.
Yeah, that's right.
And they were telling us about the Hacienda, the ship?
Yeah, the Hacienda was a vessel that came from, I'm not sure where, but anyways, it arrived in Churchill and was the first one ever to come in on its third trip. In the same year. And
that was this year that we're seeing here?
That was in 50 55. Mm-hmm. I went up 55, eh?
Yeah, I think so.
First year, yeah. Yeah. And there's the completed... the new terminal, new addition, and everybody's very happy about that. Oh, this little, on the hacienda at the bow end, a little Indian boy was standing on the railing, and I took a picture of him. He was there because he had poor health, and he was being brought into the city for treatment. And the fellow I was with was a Boy Scout, Wolf Cub leader or Boy Scout or something. So he did the salute. That's the Wolf Cub salute, you see. Mm-hmm. And he give it back, you know, like this. It was kind of cute, you know.
So what took you to Churchill? Were you overseeing the...
No, I was a grain inspector there. Yeah, there was a reason I went to Churchill, too, you know. Yeah, I had to get some money, build a house. Yeah, I didn't gamble. I loaned money to gamblers, but I didn't gamble. This is the of the whaling plant, and you see some white whales here that are going in for processing, and they're brought in by the natives. They ride around in canoes, driven by outboard motors, and because the rails come up for air and go down and up and down, the man driving the boat will drive them to where the whales are coming up, and the man at the bow of the boat will take out his gun and shoot them. And they'll shoot them like a harpoon. They'll try and get the whale caught in the harpoon so that they can drag it out and not lose it. And they bring them all to the whaling plant, and they get paid accordingly, whatever they're paying in those days.
Do you know what the whaling plant did?
Well, they processed it for oil, primarily. Yeah, there wasn't much meat on a whale, you know, like in terms of for human food and that. But what else they do with it, I don't know.
You said earlier how there would be a family in the canoe.
Oh, yeah, there would be. You know, it wasn't unusual to see a family in a canoe, and even a dog or two, and they're coming across the Churchill River, and they're towing maybe 3, 4, 5 whales very, very slowly. Very calm water, thank goodness. But they had very little freeboard. They only had about that much freeboard. It was just amazing to watch them, you know.
Close to the water.
Yeah. Come across there. And they bring them in, you know. And normal thing for them. This is just some of the boats that were there, the hacienda again. And there's the tugboat that of course, was made available to the ocean-going vessels to bring them in and take them out of port. Because we're right at the mouth of the river, you know, that goes into Hudson's Bay. There's some of the boats. And this is the grain loading. The grain is conveyed through the gallery on belts, endless belts, and they deliver from the belt into a spout. And this spout is tripped, what we call tripped. And it poured the grain into specific places aboard the ship. And these are some of the spouts that were used. This fella here, you notice how it's got a swivel at the end there, sort of, and they can direct it by ropes, you know, as to where about the grain's going to land aboard the ship. And some of them, there's quite a design of ship, you know. If you take a bulk carrier, he generally has got a good area in which to deliver the grain, but in a freighter, a general purpose freighter, there's between decks and all different places in which they have to consider for loading. And when they do that, you know, they have to maneuver these boats around to make sure they get in.
Do they ever make mistakes?
Oh no, we're supposed to catch the mistakes. We caught them. But they had what they call a trimmer. Now, a trimmer is a machine which is independent of the power of the elevator, in that when the grain comes from the spout, it goes into this trimmer, which is like a, it's a big, it's a fairly big machine, but it's suspended on a overhead cable, and they can direct this trimmer around in the hold of the ship, and they can point it just about anywhere, and the full force of the grain coming out down that spout goes through the trimmer, which is propelling the grain to where they want to put it, and they'll just shoot it into the corner of the ship and wherever they have to put it. So it's an aid to the grain distribution aboard the vessel.
I'm not that familiar with the loading of the vessel, so what would be, or is there a difference between the stevedores and the grain trimmers? Are they the same?
They're essentially the same. Well, stevedores usually relate to people that do all kinds of vessel cargo handling, you know, like right from a car, if you like, you know, right up into the grain business, grain industry. And so they do all kind of commodities and that sort of thing, you know, but the trimmers, that's just a term, more or less. You know, we call them trimmers because the trimmer is the guy that puts the grain in there and trims it off to the right level and all this sort of thing. It's kind of a nickname. Here we are. We're polar bearing and we're canoeing. Mm. This is how they travel, you know.
These are all pictures you took?
Yeah. Well, no, these are postcards. Huh? Yeah, these are postcards.
But the other pictures are all
yours? Yeah, these
are
all I took, yeah. Yeah. Great shoreline. It's the rockiest beach in the world, I think. There's the Fort Prince of Wales. These are the cannons there. And these are writings on the rock by Samuel Hearn. And it's downriver from the fort. Yeah, and there we are, just admiring them. You know? What? That's me, yeah. Yeah, this is the tugboat that was used there for moving the big ships here and there as was needed. This is one of the nice dogs. He was a nicer dog. But this is the fort again. These are some of the guys that went over there with.
Do you remember the names?
No. No, I hardly remember my own at the time. Oh, this is down at the White Shell. It's a while ago, isn't it, eh? These are the crew. This is the gang that was up at the time I was up in 55. Yeah. And this is the same dog with that fella. And this is how the dogs would roam around. You know, you don't want to get mixed up with those dogs. They get kind of funny. But this is going back from Churchill, and that's looking at the elevator. I shouldn't say going back to Churchill. That's the elevator there. Mm-hmm. And this is on the Prince of Wales Fort. And these are postcards. You know, this is the station. And this is how the dogs carried the luggage for the trappers. And that's the family, Eskimo family. And there we are. Just the inside of the igloo. See what I mean by... Mm-hmm. Now, notice they got the little child here too, you know.
Strong backs, those women.
Yeah. Well, that's why they're all bow-legged. Mm-hmm. Like this, because they've been made to carry some pretty heavy burdens. That's just pictures. That's the station. That's real. That's the station at Churchill. Here it is again. Well, I'm not sure about that. Oh, that's going into the town of Churchill. Yeah. It's quite a little town. I can't remember exactly what it is, but one of them is a hotel.
Perhaps this one?
Oh, God, it's hard. That could be a Hudson Bay store, too. But this is the Main Street.
Hmm. And yeah. This, what year is this? These pictures?
See, there's the Churchill terminal way back there. Yeah.
So that would be about 1955?
Well, that probably would be 57, eh? Yeah, because 58 I went out west.
Oh, 57 right here.
Yeah, there you go. There we go. This is just some old equipment that was by the elevator and used in this construction. We were just mocking out, you know, engineer, or he's cranking it, looking at the motor and all this sort of thing. And below here, see, here's the rail track that leads into the elevator and the grain cars go into the in the dumper house. And these natives lived down in this. This is the water down here. That's the river right there. And these people lived here. And every time they had another child, they added another room. So all these are primarily made of car doors. Those wooden car doors, you know. Yeah, it's quite a place. They had a dog. Not like it's not here, but there was a dog chained to a post just here. I was walking down here, and I went up. You know, I said, "Oh, hi, fella. How are you?" By God, he nearly. Yeah. And here's the tug. No, this is an ocean going vessel. Yeah, same one. Yeah, that's George and the gang.
So this has ice in the.
Oh yeah.
In the slip, so that would have been spring.
Probably, yeah, because it would only get worse, you know.
But you said George and the gang. So who's George?
He was the inspector in charge. Well, no, he wasn't. Was George inspector in charge then?
What's George's last name?
George Killeen. I think George is dead now, you know. Yeah, I think George is dead. Yeah. Joe Yokowski's dead. George is dead. And I can't see Alec. Alec was up with us.
Alec
Waywood. He's probably dead too, because he's much older than I was.
Where would the inspectors would be from? Winnipeg, mostly?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, they started to change them after a while. You know, they give some experience to the Thunder Bay guys, because Thunder Bay never had the same experience as we had, you know. No, we were the, what would you call it, where you would get the better performing inspector from the point of view that we handled many, many more inspections in Winnipeg than what they handled in Thunder Bay. Because, you know, that's all we did all day, is just look at grain samples. And so it would just polish your abilities and skills and so on. And then, of course, we had some pretty strict training people, you know, of which I was one at one time. There's the elevator. This is winter, you see. They wanted us to stay. This is probably around Thanksgiving in there. This was in 57. And they wanted to keep us there till February. So I came home with that. And this is the dew line tanks. They put a reservoir for fueling the dew line system in Churchill, and they built these tanks. Quite a thing to watch them go up. These welders that come out, you know, and that's all they do all day long, is just weld huge sheets of metal to form these tanks. It's really something.
For oil?
Yeah, well, it's diesel oil and fuel and whatever. Yeah. And this is from on top of the elevator, of course, and we're taking pictures of this and that and everything. Here we are. Cleared the snow.
So that's your crew that you were up there with?
Yeah. Yeah, there's George and Joe. I know all those people, but I can't remember their names. Mm-hmm. I think that's Alec there, Alec Waywood. Here we are, we're on the tug. And there's a little Indian boy, an Eskimo child. Look at the gear they got on, isn't that remarkable? Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Oh, this is Baikomo.
Oh, yeah. I still close in.
Yeah, this is Baikomo. Don't the build a Baikomo to Quebec. Because notice how the elevator is on a slant here. It's 15 degrees. It's the only elevator that is built like this. The Cargill elevator. It's the largest grain elevator in Canada. You know? Oh, it's.
And why did they build it on 15 degrees?
Well, the engineer, apparently, he came, he was out in a boat, and they're looking for an area in which to put this elevator. And they came into the bay there, and he looked at that. We'll put it right there. And that's what they did. And it's on a 15-degree angle. Yeah, this is...
What was the effect of it being on a 15-degree angle? Anything?
Not that I could see. Not that it's terrible walking up that hill back and forth. See, I was there to open that elevator. And that required me to venture through the premises all the time to see what was going on and how things were developing and what was right or wrong or whatever before the commission licensed it, you know, for handling grain. So it was quite an experience, believe me. Yeah. And these are just pictures taken. I'm just viewing that. What on earth is that? I don't know.
What year would this have been, Mr. Duke?
60, I guess. 60, I started 60, there. 61. 60, 62. Eh? We were there 2 years, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Was he down there full time at that point? Or was he?
We all went.
You all went.
Yeah, we lived there. Yeah. There we are. This is the church. This is the Bay Como.
Yeah.
There you are. Now you see right in here. I think it was there. Yeah. The elevator split. It burst. And the grain ran down. I'm not sure if it was there. Yeah, I think it was there.
So Mr. Duke is pointing to a picture of the elevator which shows two portions of the elevator, slanted portions, divided by a couple of silos. And he was pointing to near the silos when he was talking about
the split. It burst out. It's due to the contraction and expansion of the metal day and night. And burst out here. And unluckily, it was all Canadian grain that burst out, you know. So anyway, they ended up, and all this roofing here, as you see, it's all metal. And all this roofing here was then cemented over, sealed. So there was no possibility of bursting again. Yeah, it was quite a thing.
Really, so where did the grain go?
On the ground.
And then it gets downgraded?
No, actually it is... I suppose some of it was destroyed, and the majority of it, though, they could pick up and bring into the elevator. They're very capable of cleaning up, if you might say, because this is a different story. This is church. This is Bay Como, but this gallery you see here running on the top. Yeah, here we are. Running on the top. In there is a long conveyor belt. Huge thing. It's the biggest conveyor belt, I think, in Canada, you know. Oh, God. 6 feet across or more. But anyway, they carried a huge amount of corn into this elevator. And below that, below here, into this section, they had Canadian grain. And invariably, they spilled the corn into the Canadian grain. So, you know, had quite a time getting them to understand that they can't do that. But anyways, this was quite... I think this contained 2.5 million and 3 million bushels, or something like that. I forget now. Very big. But then they had these storage bins. These are all storage bins, and these are all filled with grain too. And they brought the grain in on these conveyors from the workhouse. That's this apparatus here, to these conveyors, and they dropped the grain in there. And then when they brought it out, it came underneath. The grain came through the floors of these steel tanks, and they brought them up in conveyors into here, and then they shipped them like any other grain. But there was a problem with dust. At least that's the way I saw it. And you could go down into these tunnels underneath that conveyed the grain from here to the vessel, and you'd be into, you know, you'd be up to your knees in dust. At least your knees, you know. It was unbelievable. But that soybeans was bad for that. Most of the corn seemed to be carried not too badly, but that soybean was a pretty dirty product. Yeah.
So was this before the time of all the dust cleaning equipment?
Oh, no. It all was there, but some places wasn't installed. I mean, there wasn't needed to be installed, because don't forget, they're handling clean grain. It's not like Thunder Bay or that, where they handled unclean grain and a lot of dust, but no, this was clean product. Mind you, the American quality and American standard of cleanliness is quite different from the Canadian. We look for a very almost millable product in wheat. Well, the Americans aren't exactly the same as that. You know, they have tolerances that we don't really appreciate, I guess. Yeah. But there's a gallery going out. These little cranes, see these things here? They're called marine towers, I'll call them towers anyway. But it's there that the grain is brought from taken out of the laker. That is a laker in there, by the way, and conveyed into the elevator here, into the workhouse for weight, and then up to the annexes for storage. Yeah.
It's quite the complex.
Well, you know, when you work there, it's always a pain in the neck. It was. Here was my office. What do you know? See? That was used for testing moisture in grain. Yeah.
Did it have a name?
Brown de Bell. But as time progressed, we came to where we had a little outfit in it like this here, which was called the CAE Moisture Tester. And a fellow in our lab originated that tester. But he went and worked for CAE, so...
Do you remember his name?
No. No. I would know it as soon as I heard it, but I... And this is my office. These are the sieves and the grading table, scales and cleaner. That's when I determine whether the grain is clean enough and so on. They have to be commercial quality. There's the headquarters, that's the desk, you know. And these are automatic grain samplers. Now what they do is, as the grain is conveyed on a belt, there's no picture of a belt here, but as the grain is conveyed, this is a belt actually here. As the grain is conveyed on the belt, these things are going around, motor driven, on a chain, as you see here, and they scoop the grain and deposit it into a funnel which carries the sample, collects it all in one place, and we have a man standing there, and when it gets a certain amount, he'll seal up the bag and drop it down to that office here. And this is where it came out, right? You can't see it here, but there's a reception here for that bag to come down, and then I take it and then I examine it. Yeah? Yeah. That's not the manoir there,
yeah,
Audrey. You think it is?
It is.
That's where we stayed for a few days. That was our house. Yeah, see the front lawn, we lowered up and down on a rope.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that could be our kids.
It is.
And our car. Yeah. And what's all this? Oh, that's downtown. Now, McCormick, he was the man that originated most of the town and church of Baycomo, because he was a paper magnate, wasn't he? Yeah. There's the church. And look inside and see the people. Whenever they had a strike, they all congregated at the church basement priest blessed them and said, go to town, you know, give them a bad time. Yeah.
That's a great book.
Well, yeah, it's kind of nice to have already.
And their original pictures, which are just taken at the time. So.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot, probably a lot more that I could have taken, but
you don't know. Been working a long, long time ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
That machine, you see, that. Yeah, that must have been, that was before we were married, Audrey.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah.
So what was that machine called?
That's a TAG Heppenstahl. And what you did is you see the samples are here, and each sample represents a carload for moisture testing purposes. And the samples are brought up to our office in Winnipeg at that time from the rail yard, and we would process them, you know, inspect them and so on. At the same time, we test the moisture content because that's very important for grain storage. So they take a portion and they determine its temperature, then drop it into this machine. It grinds the grain, and the amount of moisture in the grain sends an impulse here through these wires to a dial, and we take the reading off the dial and put it against this chart to tell you what the moisture is. And like we would get 1,000 cars in a day or more, and we'd do that to all those cars. So we had to be pretty damn fast.
Mm-hmm. Eh? Now, seems to me when I was talking to someone else, they were talking about the grain testing in Winnipeg. And at one time, just about all of the grain that went through Winnipeg was tested here.
Yeah, that's right.
Did that change?
Yeah.
And what led to that change? Do you recall?
It was just evolution, I guess, because we did away with the yard sampling. Like all grain coming into Winnipeg had to be inspected. That's when I started on the job. And it was sampled, every rail car was sampled in the yards, and all the grain out of local elevators were sampled in our yard. So all grain going through Winnipeg was sampled, and samples came up to our office, and we processed them there. We did the inspection of it, and that information was relayed via. However, that day, in those days, I think some even went by mail because we didn't have the fast dispatch of information. But it went down to Thunder Bay, so that this gave them some binning direction or some knowledge of what the quality of the grain is that was coming. And so they would, I don't know what they did with it in Thunder Bay, even though I worked there. Because that system had gone. We hadn't, the yards then, the yard staff was gone. And what they did, instead of stopping every car, sampling every car in Winnipeg, they reverted to a system where they had the country elevator manager place a sample inside the car door of the rail car, so that when it came into Winnipeg, our people would go out and take the sample out of the rail car, and make notation about the quality of the car, you know, whether it was any broken or leakages or things of that nature. But they wouldn't sample it. They would take the sample out of the car, and it would come up to Winnipeg, to the head office. And we would process it there, like the same as we were doing when our own people were doing the sampling of the cars. And then after a while, they cut that out. And they did it only on the unload at Thunder Bay and at Vancouver. Those were the primary points. Well, Prince Rupert as well, I guess. But, yeah, they gradually phased out procedures and services and people. And eventually, like today, I'm not sure that they've changed from just sampling and unload. so that the elevator has some knowledge of what the quality of the grain is that's in the car that they're immediately handling, you know, because of that, but it goes very fast, you know. You know, we used to think, I think it was 7 minutes a car or some darn time, but it went very fast. And they would have maybe three tracks going into the workhouse, and they're all dumping out grain. Now they're hoppers, of course, which is more grain and a quick unload. And so they're possibly doing even better time, I don't know. But yeah, they gradually phased out the original system to what they have today, which is inspection and unload. And I understand that they were going to cut out the weighing inward and rely solely on the billing weights from the country elevator as the guide to what's in the car. But I don't know that now. I'm not there to know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a gradual decrease in the service of the inspection, and I guess some degree to the weighman. You know? Yeah. It was a good system in the old days because we were used to it.
Mm-hmm. When you said that they did the when they did the taking the samples in the yards here, where were the staff set up?
Oh, in the rail yards.
So the CP yard and the CN
CP
yard?
CP and CN and Transcona also. Like there was three, eh? CP, CN, and... Oh, sorry. CP, CN, and Transcona.
Okay, and so the CN would be the Symington yards?
Oh, no, they weren't there then.
Oh, they weren't. Okay, oh, no. So where were they? Do you remember?
No.
No?
I don't know where they were. I know CP.
Where was that?
At Weston was that way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Weston. And when you go over the Arlington Bridge, you're going over the CPR yards.
Mm-hmm.
And then the CN was, gosh, I don't know. I worked in the CP yards for a while. You know, that basic training. But I can't remember CN where it was. Fort Rouge, I think.
Mm. That would make sense.
Fort Rouge. And then they had Transcona. Yeah. And that was a very it accommodated everybody, because the grain trade in Winnipeg here could select from the cars that are going through Winnipeg. Like, when, believe it or not, there's a great amount of selection that goes on by millers and processors like malt houses and places like that. So they want to get some product in which they can, you know, endeavor to sell to the different millers and bakers, and not bakers, but millers and maltsters and people like that. But I don't know what they do now about that. It's kind of interesting to find out, but I'm not really interested to find out.
No, these other pictures are of the ones, more or less, of his travels to India and Russia and whatever.
Yeah.
They're all pictures of people and whatnot. You want to look at them?
Maybe take
it up to you.
Take a peek
and,
while we're here.
His retirement one.
Well, that would be good.
Yeah, let's take a peek. I'll put it on pause while we regroup.
Yeah.
You on while you tell me about why you went to...
I went to Italy.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I went to Italy. I can't remember dates, but I went to Italy, and there was a problem with container shipments of lentils. And I went behind Mount Vesuvius. Yeah. In order to do the appreciation of the problem. And that's what these pictures are.
What was the problem?
Well, vaguely, as I remember it, they expected a certain quality of lentil into the area that I went to, and that particular dealer, and he was the largest handler, purchaser, and handler and distributor of lentils in Italy. And we looked at the product, and I can't remember exactly what it concluded, but it was one of those trips where you try and find out if there is a genuine problem or whether or not you can satisfy the fellow that has the product, you know, that it really does conform to our standards and so on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. God, I don't know where that is. No. And this is Mr. Liu, and that was the man who was responsible for the purchasing of all products coming into China. And he was responsible for he was the in coming in, and this was the going out. One of the two. Anyway, this is a high communist official, and this is a hard-working man, whatever he was called. But anyway, and this guy was the interpreter, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Wasn't he?
And that's where we went.
They claim that he spoke better Chinese than the Chinese.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was quite a guy. But these here, we went in underneath Niagara Falls. And this guy here, he was a real character. He climbed up, there's a railing that goes around. Here's holding on here, but there's kind of a wall that goes around at the top of Niagara Falls. He climbed up on top of it, you know, and here's the... And this man was having an absolute fit.
Don't
yeah, because that was the nature of the beast, Mr. Liu.
And why were Mr. Liu and... What was the other fellow's name?
I don't know. I can't remember.
And why were they here?
For the Institute, Canadian National Grains Institute. Yeah. They were here on course, so to speak. But we brought the Chinese into our Winnipeg office to give them some idea how grain inspection was performed here. And, yeah, that was kind of interesting. You know, when you're talking to the Chinese and you're endeavoring to explain clearly just what you did in terms of the inspection for the grain going to their that had been sold to them or
and were they fairly big customers?
Oh yeah, Chinese were big customers. Yeah, China, Russia, Japan on the oil seeds. Oh yeah.
I have a question about what happened. After the ships leave here, loaded with our grain,
yeah.
So when China or any of the countries started to import Canadian product, do they have elevators to unload to?
Well, what I saw was only in Russia where they had elevators. And even in Russia, you know, you wouldn't like to see Canadian grain going into Russian elevators. At least the ones I saw, because they were so dilapidated and damaged. For example, the one place I was at, they had outdoor conveyors, and it was like going from here almost to Portage Avenue on an outdoor conveyor about that wide. And the side of the, on the side of the silo that was readily visible was a huge hole. I mean, we're talking about, like, though you saw those silos in the Churchill elevator. Well, just picture a great big hole in the side of that, and the grain was going up into that elevator. Now, you know, you just don't leave holes in the sides of the elevators. At least here you don't. You don't have them happen even.
So
their facilities now in India, they do everything. What happens when the grain comes in They don't have the marine legs like we have that go down and take the grain out and it's conveyed into the workhouse and so on. They have men that go down with shovels and sacks and they fill the sacks. And they fill and fill and fill and fill. And then they sew them up, tie them up, call for the crane, comes down inside, picks up the sacks, and it goes over the side, drops it on the dock side. Men come along, throw them on their head, or they throw them onto a truck, one of the two, but in any event, it ends up on the head of some poor Blackian Indian, and they go to what they call the go-downs. Now, the go-downs are low warehouses. They're not two-story, they're one-story, and this is where they pile the sacks of grain. And the temperatures in there, in that tropical country, I'm telling you, you would not believe. And the potential for damage to grain through infestation and that is just, it's not hard to believe if you don't know anything about grain bugs. But it's really something. They're all different. And we went to India because there was a complaint there. And we explained to them, I went with a grain commissioner at the time, and we explained to them, you know, the Canadian system and all sorts of hope of understanding to them. And they didn't want us there to resolve the problem. They wanted us there to tell, so that they could tell the people that they had got the officials of the Canadian government to come and examine the situation and provide them with relief from what the complaint was. It was more of a show rather than a... as long as they could say they did this. It was just, it was political, sort of, you know? Yeah.
So the, obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, but in those countries, like India, for example, there was no inspection on the other end.
I went into the inspection office and I'm not sure whether it was Calcutta or in New Delhi. But anyway, I went into the grain office there and it was absolutely... There wasn't a kernel of grain anywhere, you know. They had all this antiquated equipment there. And, you know, right away you knew that, it wasn't usable. It wasn't used. It wasn't used for the purpose that we might think it would be used. And so they have things, but they're more for show than they are for any other reason.
Where would their equipment have come from? Just what's crossing my mind was some of Canadian old equipment shipped over to...
Oh, no, I don't think anything like that. I think it's something that, every country accumulates a scale and things of that nature. Sieves, I don't know if they do that. I don't know if they do moisture testing. I don't know.
So they took your word for it that the grain was as good as it was, and...
Well, we could prove that all the time, you know, there's no problem. But it's quite different. Like, Canada is very, very complete and thorough in what they do in terms of grain going into foreign countries, and even locally, like, there's no division where you say, well, it's only going to so-and-so, so we'll this. Or it's only going there, so we'll do that. There's none of that. It's a very stable system that applies everywhere. Locally, internally, and externally. You know? It's very, very thorough. Here he is. There's the man that... It climbed the wall, as I called it. And there he is. There's Mr. Liu with him. Mr. Liu. That's the chief commissioner at the time, Del Pound. Did you ever know Del Pound? Nobody know Del Pound? He's got Parkinson's disease. He lives in Calgary now. Oh, who am I standing there with? I don't know.
Yeah, those
who's
are all
that guy?
Things not on,
right? I don't know. These are just like personal pictures. They're all dressed up, you see. You can hardly see his tie, you know. Mm-hmm. Very often didn't wear a tie. Yeah.
There you are with a delegation. Or no, that's not you, but is that you?
Yeah, that's me here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See how big I am over those little guys? You go to India, you know, and you walk down the street, you know, and you can see everybody's head. Because they're all short, you know. Yeah. I'm not sure where. Oh, this must be in China. In Taiwan or someplace.
And what took you to Taiwan?
Institute. I went there to, you know, provide instruction on Canadian green inspection to the Taiwanese, whoever's, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Nothing but the best, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing but the best. Oh, here we are. I almost look like a preacher. You know what they did? They took us for lunch like this in Taipei. It was in Taipei then. And, look at here. I don't know what these really are. Anyway, and you sit in a round table, you see, and this time we're hosting the Orientals so that we have to more or less, you know, provide the drinks and all that kind of stuff. Big round tables. And so there's quite a number of guys. There's probably 12 guys at the table. So, and you take your glass and you say, or for some reason somebody says something, you go like this, like with a glass like this here. They all lift up their glasses and everybody has a drink. Well, you do that after, no, you're tanked, you know. Yeah.
This looks like Montreal.
Probably is.
Yeah. That was at
Habitat?
The Habitat,
trip
when yeah.
You took the Oriental people.
Because I traveled with him in Eastern Canada, you know,
yeah,
up into Quebec, yeah, in Western Canada, right up to Vancouver.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were a few perks in the job. Yeah. That'll be I don't think that's Thunder Bay.
No, it might be Montreal elevator, you think?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, because you're going that way.
Yeah, it's hard to see. Yeah, it's Montreal. Yeah. Where is that?
That's at the...
You been there? Is that the Rideau Canal or someplace?
Mm, could be.
I don't know. No idea.
Or at the expo grounds. I'm not sure.
Oh, God, I don't know. That's beyond me. Well, we got pictures, Audrey, but heaven knows what they are.
Well, that was before I decided what I do before.
Yeah. With the training that was done, you know, on inspection, with the customers, did any of them set up their own systems based on that training, or was it more just for them to be aware of what we did?
I think it was like you just said, you know, that was more or less about familiarization, a training, and understanding, you know. Yeah, I think undoubtedly, they gained a certain amount of knowledge. They, they're always writing something down and doing something. But they're selected people, you know. They don't just bring over a bunch of people without selecting them. Apparently, the way they did it in China was they would get a great number of people out of the grain trade, I suppose, or, you know, a connection somehow. And they would sort of make an evaluation of them, you know, on an individual basis. And then they form a group and send them over. So when they go back, now they have to take all this information that they picked up here and relay it to whoever is over there. So it's kind of a source of information for everybody's knowledge, if they can convey it properly.
This one is when you went to London, and you went because of that mill. Don't ask me the name of it. All I know it was in England, in London.
Really? I'll tell you, you don't want to stand still too long.
Okay, here you are on a camel. And
you know, you see that one there? That's in you know, the park where they...
Times Square?
No, the People's Corner.
Oh, right.
People's Corner, yeah. See, he's standing on the milk crate?
Now that's called Speaker's Corner.
Yeah.
That's it, yeah.
And he says, "Oh, I'm sorry I've kept you waiting," he says. Oh, this is in Morocco. Yeah.
And what took you to Morocco?
I had to give what's the word? I had to deliver a rule that we made for the, what was it for? It was for lentils, I think. Legume, we'll say, but it's mainly lentils, for the international market, buying it by container. And so I wrote out this ruling. I did it myself. I wrote it out and I took it to the commission. They approved it and I went over there and delivered it.